Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast. What's happening? This is Tuesday, February 20th, and bring on the Hall of Fame arguments. This is your host, Matt Shook. You can find me on Twitter at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that, and also give us a follow on our Locked On Pistons Twitter account at Locked On Pistons, and check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons-Matt Shook. And today we'll be giving a rundown of the tough schedule for the Pistons coming up, and also be talking about the Basketball Hall of Fame, including the exclusion of Chauncey Billups, Rip Hamilton, and Ben Wallace from the finalists for the Basketball Hall of Fame, an announcement that was made at All-Star Weekend in Los Angeles over the weekend. And also we'll be talking about those who made it, including another former Pistons player, and giving a little bit of history lesson for the Pistons in the Hall of Fame as well. But the present-day Pistons will be returning to action on Friday after the All-Star break concludes. They will be playing at home on Friday night against the Boston Celtics, the team that is now number two in the Eastern Conference behind the Toronto Raptors after the Celtics kind of slipped up to head into the All-Star break. But then the Pistons, after that game, will be playing their 11 of their next 14 games on the road. And that stretch concludes with a tiresome six-game road trip out west. And of those next 15 games after the break, including that Boston game, 10 of them are against teams with winning records, and 5 are against losing teams. And it's the extremes of those varieties. The top teams in the NBA, including Houston, Boston, Toronto twice, the leaders in the Eastern Conference, also Cleveland, which is rejuvenated, wants to get in a little bit of a groove with all their new players as they look ahead to the playoffs too. And then, of course, some of the dregs, some of the tanking teams of the NBA too, Orlando, Chicago, Sacramento, Phoenix, all teams that have losses that losses will probably benefit the franchise more than winning in the short term with the NBA draft looking ahead to June as well. So, but in short, with 10 of those games against winning teams, 5 of those games against losing teams, and the Pistons playoffs hosts resting on every single game the rest of the way, not to overstate things, but it's big boy time for the Pistons. It's time to get things going, as Stan Van Gundy and the team need to make up a deficit in the Eastern Conference to return to the playoff top 8. The Pistons are the 9th team in the NBA's Eastern Conference right now, and of course only 8 teams make the playoffs. 1.5 games right now behind the Miami Heat, which are in the 8th place spot. 3 games behind Philly for 7th, so a little bit longer to go to reach Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, and the guys. But they're only the Pistons are only 5 games out of 4th place in the Eastern Conference playoffs, so there is a cluster there and a chance for a good handful of teams to possibly collapse and give the Pistons a chance to get back into the playoff hunt. They'll need something similar to the start that they had at the beginning of the season to get things going. You got to probably win about 60% of your games the rest of the way if you want to get back into the playoffs. But a little bit later, we're going to be talking back into the past and talk about the current Hall of Fame discussion that should be popping up in Detroit. But if your company is interested in men between the ages of 18 and 44, then your company should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Pistons is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 and 44. So if you want men 18 to 44, this is your spot. Plus, our rates are reasonable. So email me at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more. Yes, sir! In Detroit, we're used to having Hall of Fame debates. It seemed like for years after the Baseball Hall of Fame announcements, everyone here locally, whether it's writers or fans, it wasn't complete of a season until we were throwing around stats and stacking up accomplishments to prove why Jack Morris and Alan Trammell and Lou Whitaker, those guys deserve going to the Hall ahead of whoever was picked that year. Now, of course, Jack and Tram are heading in this summer into Cooperstown. But anyways, it's time for a new debate as Chauncey, Rip, and Ben were left off the list for finalists to the Hall this year. Those were announced on Saturday, and the honorees will be announced during the Final Four a little bit later this year as well. The players on the finalist list this year are guys who are considered maybe no-brainers, especially Jason Kidd and Steve Nash, and then a little bit less so of a no-brainer with Ray Allen. But then it gets interesting. Grant Hill's on the list, and so is Mo Cheeks, former Pistons coach, maybe the worst Pistons coach of all time. Chris Webber of Michigan's Fab Five fame, who, of course, is also a former Piston, if you don't remember his short stint with the Detroit Ball Club. But certainly, you wouldn't classify him as a Piston in terms of this discussion when comparing him to guys that we think of as the red, white, and blue with Chauncey, Rip, and Ben. And then Rudy Tomjanovich, a former Michigan player who also won 2 titles as coach of the Houston Rockets. Interestingly enough, Rasheed Wallace didn't even make the semifinal list to get snubbed, so he's a snub of snubs of sorts. But to draw upon this discussion, Kevin Pelton of ESPN.com, one of their fine writers, had a tweet in an article over the weekend that he referenced an article that he had wrote over before and then tweeted out a link to it this weekend, and his tweet said, "Chauncey Billups not being a Hall of Fame finalist in his first year of eligibility is an egregious oversight. When I rank this year's candidates based on their NBA value," the Hall also considers college and international play, "Billups ranked fourth." And he's on that list that Kevin Pelton put together ahead of Grant Hill, who was fifth, Ben Wallace, who was sixth, and Chris Webber, who was seventh. But the thing that's interesting, as Pelton noted in his tweet, is that and it makes it difficult to debate these kind of things with basketball, is the Hall of Fame in Springfield, Massachusetts also includes college and international play. So Grant Hill's 1996 gold medal contributes to his candidacy. But I also believe that the Basketball Hall is more about big picture cultural significance than maybe the Baseball Hall is, which is something that I actually kind of like. I mean, the old terrible baseball writers, they pour over this every summer, and they talk all about stats and career stats and the accumulation of stats over a whole body of work when going over these things. Career numbers that make guys like Burt Blyleven, who won, 13 to 16 games for like 20 years, getting in over guys like Jack Morris, who has big moments and really was an all-star for a lot of the 1980s. He threw a no-hitter in his great season in 1984 and threw probably the most clutch game of all time, really throwing 10 scoreless innings in Game 7 of the World Series to lift Minnesota Twins to the title that year. He was, like I said, the pitcher of the 80s, but since Blyleven has more wins than Morris, 287 to 254, so 33 more career regular season wins in his career than he's in, just because of the statistical nature of what the baseball writers look at. Now, obviously, Grant Hill and Chris Webber, those guys are boosted by their college careers at Duke and Michigan and their cultural significance. Like I mentioned, Grant was being a little bit of an NBA national face of the league after Michael Jordan was mostly out of the picture. And then Webber with the Fab Five thing and also being a trailblazer for things like accepting money while playing in college. He really set a trend there. And then Grant Hill, the endorsements and the fact that he was thrust upon being a superstar in the NBA before injuries kind of took over his college or his NBA career. By the way, Rip has a pretty solid college career for stacking that up in there too, hitting that shot for UConn along the way against Washington that led to their national championship back in 1998. I went and watched that shot, by the way, something I forgot about. Rip, Jake Voskal missed a hook shot for UConn there, and then Rip had the first offensive rebound tapped right to him and missed an easy six-footer right before that. And then the ball bounced around a little bit and came right back to Rip once again, who hits that fadeaway at the buzzer. So that buzzer beater was the second shot by Hamilton, and it was worth noting that he blew like an easy shot for the win right before that. But be that as it may, with Rip's solid college resume, I think he's pretty far down on that list to make the Hall. The body of work just isn't there. And of course, the end of his Pistons tenure probably has a little bit something to do with it. Not only did his production fall with likes of Mo Cheeks and such coaching him, but he became kind of a malcontent and rode his way out of town and really didn't have any significant moments after that in the NBA. I talked on a previous podcast about this group, and I did say back then that I believe that Hill would be the choice over Chauncey, Ben, and Rip, but I have to say the Webber thing is a little bit perplexing. I think the biggest thing he's known for are melting in the big moments. The timeout at Michigan, obviously, and then pretty much playing hot potato in the clutch for his whole playoff career in Sacramento. Big moments against the Los Angeles Lakers, Shaq and Kobe really stand out there. And then around Detroit with Michigan fans, I feel like there's also battle lines drawn and like his ongoing feud with Jalen Rose, and most Detroiters probably take Rose's side. So in a poll of some of this stuff, not only would Pistons love go over Chris Webber, but the Michigan history of Chris Webber might even hurt him in some context. But when I look at this debate going back to the Tigers comparison, it's interesting because you have a lot of the same parallels there. The Tigers in 1984 winning the title, the Pistons in 2004 winning the title. So 20 years separate those groups, and you had one championship won out of those groups. Now, obviously, the Pistons could argue that they made all those Eastern Conference finals in a row, and plus the two NBA finals with the championship year and then the loss to San Antonio in 2005, but really kind of an unfulfilled group. If you're sitting there trying to make an argument that all of Chauncey Billups and Ben Wallace and Rip Hamilton and even Rashid and those guys deserve a little bit of love when it comes to the Hall of Fame, then the question then becomes, well, where are more rings if you have guys that are three or possibly even four Hall of Famers playing on the same team? And I think it's a pretty valid thing to ask. Now, that plays more into the Tigers argument. If you get Lou Whitaker and Jack Morris and Alan Trammell, and then maybe other guys like Lance Parrish as well, who wouldn't be Hall of Fame candidates, but maybe other guys as part of this argument. If you have all those guys in the primes of their career playing together for a Hall of Fame manager, which is another thing that both of these teams have in common with Sparky Anderson and Larry Brown, then why only the one title? And I've always kind of brought that up to Tigers fans who talked about how Tram and Lou and Whitaker all deserve to be in there. There's a lot of people that say that, you know, Whitaker is snubbed and it's too bad that Whitaker shouldn't be in there with Trammell this summer. But Lou Whitaker is a Detroit guy, so of course Tigers fans are going to love him and take his side. But I just don't think in terms of a Hall of Fame and a national significance that those guys resonate as much. And I think the same thing goes for the Pistons, but I think in a way that's what makes them, you know, more Detroit, more our team. They're a little bit undervalued. They're a little bit overlooked, and they're got a little bit of a chip on their shoulders, even in their post-playing careers. And I think that's a special thing. I mean, I think it's something that it's a little bit cliche, but it's really what this kind of Pistons era is all about with the going to work team. And even with the Bad Boys to a certain extent, obviously Isaiah Thomas was an alpha dog and a superstar in his own right. But I think, you know, that those teams had that thread of guys that had a chip on their shoulder and guys that overperformed maybe their talent levels and put it together for the greater good. And I think that, interestingly, I tried to, in the first half of the season, especially when the Pistons were playing so well this year, I tried to take a look at those teams and say, you know, everyone talks about how no superstars on any NBA champions, even you can't have an NBA championship without superstars, except for the 04 Pistons. It always gets brought up. And I was thinking, does this group, you know, the Drummond, and when you had Tobias Harris and Avery Bradley and Reggie Jackson in there, is that group ever going to grow into the Bad Boys or the going to work era? And I couldn't talk myself into it. And I don't think you really could. I mean, obviously there were young guys who could have improved together and improved along the way, but you just didn't see it with that group. You didn't see the ability to turn it on when it mattered. You didn't see the toughness that would be needed to overcome the fact that you don't have a superstar. And I think that Stan Van Gundy probably saw that day in and day out as well. And that's part of the reason why he made the Blake Griffin deal. Now, will the Blake Griffin deal ever work out? Will Blake Griffin ever become the superstar that he was in his first 5 years of the league? That remains to be seen. And I'm pretty dubious about it, pretty doubtful in a long-term picture situation. Although I'm not dissing the trade. I still think it was something to breathe some life into this franchise, which was well needed. And when you talk about being a perennial playoff team, well, that's a lot better than we've had for the past several years. But like I said, I really didn't see building around guys like Tobias Harris and Avery Bradley as a feasible way towards getting championships and toward lighting that fuse of what's driven Detroit Pistons' success over the past, you know, 20, 30 years or so. So just some things to think about. But like I said, with that history, there's a lot of guys that have made the Hall of Fame from the Detroit Pistons. We're going to talk about some of those guys in a little bit, some surprising names in there. But we got a new coach in Detroit as well with the Detroit Lions. So you should be listening to Locked On Lions with Matt Derry of Detroit Radio. You know Matt. You should check that out every day and check out the other NBA podcasts as well. We got one for each NFL and NBA team. The Locked On Network, your team every day. So the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield opened up in 1959, and the Pistons as a franchise started, by the way, in 1941 in Fort Wayne. So they had big induction classes to open it up for the first couple, but the Pistons actually didn't get a player into the Hall of Fame until 1961, the third induction class there. So Andy Phillip was the one player who made it. That year, he only played for the Fort Wayne Pistons for a couple years, so it wasn't like he was a Piston through and through or anything like that. And then there was 22 years before the Pistons got another selection in, and it was a guy who was more known for his time to the New York Knicks, obviously, and that's Dave DeBuscher. So interesting that the Pistons were shut out for so long in the Basketball Hall of Fame when you look at things from a historical perspective. But of course, that makes a lot of sense when you think about the doldrums of the Pistons franchise in the early years. I mean, a lot of people my age would note that or a lot of people who are older than me would note that the Pistons really didn't have a whole lot of success at all until the Bad Boys got in there. We know about Bob Lanier and Dave Bing as guys that have their jerseys retired and are pretty much the go-to guys when you talk about the Pistons' history, you know, in the pre-Isaiah Thomas days. But interestingly enough, you know, even those guys had a hard time getting in until a few years later. But after DeBuscher in 83, you had 4 more years before a guy named Bob Hubregs got in 1987. And, you know, the Basketball Hall of Fame is a little bit like the Baseball Hall of Fame in that there's a lot of these historical names in the pre-modern era or whatever that just kind of get in, and they have to throw some of those old names in. So you get a lot of names that maybe don't stack up culturally in terms of significance as some of the other guys. But that wasn't the case for Dave Bing, who is a modern player there as well. He got in 1990. He was the next one. And then Harry Gallatin was the next in 1991. Don't know much about him, nor Dick McGuire, who got it in 1993. Then you got some guys sprinkled on this list who were Pistons technically, but weren't really known much for their career in Detroit, and that's the category of a guy like Walt Bellamy, who played with the Pistons for a couple years but got in 1993. Then Daddy Rich, Chuck Daly, the late Chuck Daly, got in 1994, representing the Pistons. And then George Yardley in 1996 got in. He played with Fort Wayne a little bit, but also played with Detroit after the Pistons moved to the Olympia in downtown Detroit. So he's kind of the before Dave Bing and Bob Lanier era, kind of the Piston that stands out the most in terms of career accomplishments, in terms of the pre-modern era. So that's the kind of the first Piston star, so to speak. But alongside him, some of those years, with those early Detroit days, was Bailey Howell, and Bailey Howell got to the Hall of Fame in 1997. 2000 brought Fred Zollner got in, and he was the original owner of the Fort Wayne Pistons. The Pistons were actually called the Zollner Pistons while they were in Fort Wayne for a while, and he did move them over to Detroit, to the Olympia, so he got in as a contributor in 2000. And then also that year, Bob McAdoo and Isaiah Thomas got in. So Isaiah Thomas, probably the greatest Piston of all time. But then you had Bob McAdoo, who had more of a career with the Buffalo, I believe, when he was a star and just a great performer early in his career, and then had the second part of his career with the LA Lakers, where he was more of a bench player, but played with the Pistons at Cobo Arena for a couple years. So, and he also played at the Silverdome, I believe, in the early 80s for the Pistons. So, a guy that has a big NBA significance, but not necessarily in terms of being an NBA or a Piston in his starring years. But then 2002, and this was before this guy even got to Detroit, he was already a Hall of Famer, and that's Coach Larry Brown. He was in the Hall before he took over the Pistons team. And then the guy who brought him over to Detroit, Joe Dumars, he gets in 2006. And then in 2008, the Pistons have 3 guys get into the Hall from their franchise. Adrian Dantley, who was traded for Mark Aguirre, and obviously his best days in the NBA aren't really noted as being in Detroit either. And then Dick Vitale, who is a classic case of a guy who went to the Hall of Fame but isn't really known for his time in Detroit, isn't known at all for his time in Detroit, was a coach for the UAD Titans and then coached for the Detroit Pistons for about a year and a half. It's pretty much, that might be the thing that separates the hardcore Pistons fans from everyone else, is if you knew that Dick Vitale was once the coach of the Detroit Pistons, then you're probably a pretty hardcore Pistons fan. But anyway, obviously his college basketball announcing is what got him into the Hall of Fame there. But also in 2008, the third member of the Pistons franchise to make the Hall of Fame, Bill Davidson, the longtime owner of the Pistons up until his death. And then the family obviously sold the franchise to Tom Gores then. Dennis Rodman gets in 2011, and that's really the last guy who gets in terms of from his Pistons lineage. And of course, Dennis goes on to the Chicago Bulls, where he has a lot of success, and really is probably a good third of his legacy in the NBA, or maybe Chicago fans would argue that it's more than that, comparatively speaking to his Pistons days. And then you throw in stints with the Lakers and the San Antonio Spurs and whoever else he was with. I'm sure they're in Dallas, I believe, and maybe another team or two that I can't think of off the top of my head. But rounding off the list were a couple of guys that are, we've talked about this on the podcast before, but classic situations of guys that stumbled onto the Pistons, but clearly their best days were already behind them at that point. And Allen Iverson, who gets in 2016, and then Tracy McGrady, who got into the Hall of Fame last year, who had a cup of coffee with the Pistons at the end of his career. Those guys will be joined soon by some other former Pistons, like I said, Grant Hill and Chris Webber, particularly look like they might be going in this year. Both of those guys played for the Pistons during their career, but it looks like guys like Chauncey and Rip and Ben Wallace, who are Pistons through and through, will have to wait at least another year. But I have a feeling that, especially with when you look at Chauncey Billups' significance on as far as a TV guy right now, and it seems like he's just so respected with that crew of his class of peers, that the talk will go on about how good he was. And like I said, maybe he's even going to be in line for a front office or coaching position at some point. He was rumored to be joining the Cleveland Cavaliers this offseason. So obviously there's some kind of interest there, and I got to believe that at some point in Chauncey's career going forward that he's going to be on the bench or in the front office there at some point for somebody. But we're going to be talking more about the Pistons here as the All-Star break continues throughout the week. And I've got a little bit of guests lined up, some other ideas of some things that might come together as well leading up to Friday's return of the NBA season with the game at home on Friday night against the Boston Celtics at Little Caesars Arena. But you should go ahead and follow the Locked On NBA Network at Locked On NBA Net on Twitter. And then also go to Facebook and give us a follow and a like on the Locked On Pistons - Matt Shook page. Go on iTunes, rate us a nice 5 stars, and give us a subscription wherever you get your podcasts as well. But thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll talk to you all again very soon.